classified as dangerously sharp.
This is the Blackwater Ethercast.
As many of you might know, despite leaving the task of cooking to your cooks, recipes exist to be followed. Some cooks, of course, believe they have a level of expertise that exempts them from the rule. But when it comes to the oldest recipes, even I am not exempt. They include references to materials one has never heard of, as the ancients had a habit of naming things based on a specific context instead of the common name. Compound that with the body of the text recorded in a series of symbols that mean nothing to the modern man. I have to admit, it did work as they intended, to keep their craft exclusive, the resulting products rare. And rightly so. Many of the recipes I have followed have turned out to be far more dangerous than any commoner could understand. As a student of these texts, my laboratory is often the site of strange and often failed experiments. And yet the results can be both startling and spectacular. Now, before you dismiss me as a quack, let me tell you what occurred while I was working on my most recent experiment. I still believe that this particular draft only went wrong during the bottling process. I was just in the process of pouring the potion into a vial with the help of a small funnel when I heard meowing from behind me. The blasted cat had infiltrated my laboratory. It had the audacity to announce its presence by meowing and even pawing at the window facing the road. By now, there can be no doubt that it knows it ought not be indoors, and especially not in there. Of course, I couldn't risk the cat leaving the window and upsetting the delicate glassware elsewhere in the room, so I marched over to him, intent on his removal. I had already grasped it by the scruff of the neck when, out of the corner of my eye, I spotted movement in one of the distant hedges and paused. It was far too great a disturbance to attribute to some stray cat or even a large dog. And then, a figure separated from the bushes and began to scale my fence. I alerted the guards and proceeded to watch from the window as they searched the area where I had seen the trespasser. It soon became clear that they were not finding anything, and as I did not see the figure run away, the individual must have escaped in the moment while I was sending word to my men. I returned to the experiment at hand, only to realize that I hadn't actually stoppered the vial, and it had gone an entirely unexpected color. Months of procuring ingredients wasted. My mood was foul. The tome from which I had derived my instructions revealed nothing I did not already know regarding the rarest of the ingredients. A shame, really. The text, so far as I had been able to decipher, described a potion that reveals suppressed emotions. Perhaps the phrase could also be translated to desires? If I cared to attempt this particular draft again, it would mean another long journey to the Dorset countryside to meet my suppliers. This time, at least, I would be sure to acquire enough for more than one attempt. And to top it all off, I discovered gray cat hair clinging to my clothes. The cat? Nowhere to be seen. Hiding if it had any sense. I absent-mindedly picked up the vial and sealed it with a cork stopper. Regardless of apparent failure, I wouldn't want any cat hair getting into it. The guards returned soon after these realizations and reported that they saw nothing and no one. Not even footprints. No doubt they stamped them out of existence with clumsy missteps before even considering to look for them in the first place. I dismissed the men sharply, and was alone once more with my frustration. Imagine my surprise when the door I had just slammed behind my men reopened suddenly. I snapped at the intruder without turning to look. "You really think coming in here now is a good idea? Get out!" "I do apologize, Lord Blackwater, but I'm afraid your anger is misdirected," an unfamiliar female voice answered. I didn't like the way she said my name, like she knew me personally. I looked toward the door, ready to throw something in my annoyance at the day's events. "I'm afraid I gave your men the slip. They really did try their hardest to find me," she said. After a moment, I realized that she was the figure scaling the fence. Meanwhile, she strode into my room, my laboratory, as though she owned the place. "What's wrong with using the front door like a civilized person?" I finally asked. "Would you have received me?" she retorted. "No." I informed her that she must leave immediately, but she merely arched her eyebrow and casually kept her distance from me, so that I could not forcibly remove her from the room. "I am told you unlawfully acquired a book during your last visit to Oxford. I demand that you return it at once," she said, while scanning the books scattered round the room. Despite her words, her tone did not sound very demanding at all. More like she was speaking to someone her junior, and was having to carefully explain a brand new concept to them. I observed what a shame it was that a man was no longer permitted to curate a respectable library without outside interference. My comment was flatly ignored as she proceeded to claim to have come into my home thanks to the bidding of the Intrepid League, and that she acted with their full support. According to the Intrepid League, they are a loose association of heroes acting for the good of the larger populace. I disagree. Unfortunately, this was not my first interaction with the League. They call themselves fearless. I would suggest that their actions are largely spurred by an irrational fear of progress. They stick their noses into business that does not concern them and pass judgment according to their own limited view of the situation. The book she was tracking down is a title I initially thought could be useful to me. It was an entertaining read, if not nearly as enlightening as I had hoped. I did, however, have great pleasure in its acquisition. I told her so, and apparently unconsciously gestured, vial still in hand. Her gaze flickered between my hand and my face before fixating on the vial. That was all the warning I had. With a move that took me completely by surprise, she lunged forward and swiped the vial from my hand. It fell and very nearly ended up shattered on the floor. Judging by the look on her face, she apparently had sharper reflexes than either of us had thought. My initial reaction to her possibly consuming the draft was one of relief. The potion was not a complete waste of my time if I could study its effects and properties. In retrospect, a part of me wishes the vial had shattered after all. Instead, the brazen woman pulled the stopper from it and imbibed the entire thing in one unladylike gulp. To add insult to injury, she grimaced at the taste. How rude. Apparently, my expression gave me away. "Can you really blame me?" she asked after wiping her mouth on her sleeve. "The stuff's positively vile." I invited her to explain why she would take the vial from me in the first place. "I could not allow you to take it and gain the upper hand." I asked her what she imagined the little potion might do exactly. At this point, her attention seemed to waver. She glanced around and commented on the sheer number of scientific instruments and fossils arranged throughout. Perhaps I imagined it, but when she looked back to me, her glare was softened and she even smiled a little. She made her way to the heavy-set table on which the tome I had been studying still lay open to the page with the failed potion's recipe. Against my better judgment, I did not redouble my efforts to get her to leave. I was intrigued. She squinted at the symbols there and called me over a moment later to point out a glyph. I could not imagine why she would want to pretend to know something she did not, aside from avoiding to appear out of her depth, which she most certainly had to be. And yet she emphatically stated, "This means treasure." I admit my surprise to find that she was correct. A lucky guess, perhaps. The glyph was vaguely box-shaped after all. But to my ever-growing surprise, she actually recognized and pointed out 3 or 4 more of them. Did the potion confer insight or make available latent knowledge? My slight must have sounded impressed or encouraging in some manner. When she turned a page to see if there were more symbols she could identify, her hand brushed mine and lingered. The new page revealed a diagram of a heart, its text describing an increase in the heart rate of test subjects during the initial trials of the potion. A glance at the woman confirmed this. Her cheeks were flushed and her breath more shallow and quick than it ought to be. her gaze locked with mine, simultaneously less focused and yet far more intense than it had been a few moments before. I did my best to step back nonchalantly and put some distance between us, stepping around the table to redirect her focus to the book was easy enough. Once I reached the opposite side, I gestured to a plush armchair a short distance behind her. "Would you care to take a seat, Miss Evelyn Price?" "Miss Price." Her response was not one of acquiescence. Instead, she began to pursue me around the table, and I kept pace to keep the table between us. When I reached the armchair, I stepped around it to place it directly in her path. "Miss Price, I insist that you sit down." I continued to back slowly away. She was not deterred by the obstacle in the slightest, and upon reaching it, ignored the invitation to sit completely. Instead, she paused to trace the chair back with a suggestive caress as she stalked around it. I realized at this point that the potion was in full effect, and that she was going to embarrass both of us in short order. Generally, I prefer to avoid suggestive social situations, unless said situation benefits me, of course. In this case, for her sake, I endeavored to keep my distance. We were on either side of my brewing bench now, a narrow table littered with glass vials and tubes, some suspended over burners. More than a few were balanced precariously, and despite all my precautions, they shuddered when she leaned on the edge of the table. The glass chimed happily and my skin crawled at the sound. When things shatter in my laboratory, I preferred the result of my own experiments. I warned her to be cautious with the equipment, but she just laughed and commented on the pretty colors contained within the glasses. I could already envision the worst. I came from behind the brewing bench to stop her from breaking anything just as she stopped and swooned slightly, staggering away from the glass instruments with all the grace of a drunkard. Unfortunately for me, she seemed to steady a mere moment later and set her sights on my person once more. My desire to preserve my ongoing experiments had given her the chance to close the distance between us, and I found myself, without an escape route, essentially cornered. Miss Price was advancing quickly. I was forced to find the first thing that came to hand to distract the lady. The cat. I snatched it unceremoniously from the windowsill, where it had been watching events unfold with that unamused expression so typical to felines, and thrust it into her now-reaching arms. It proclaimed its irritation at being picked up so brusquely with a loud yowl, but thankfully no flurry of claws. Upon its deposit into the lady's arms, and my subsequent escape to the other side of the room, it meowed pitifully, the sound of a creature betrayed. My sympathy might have been greater if it had not been in the laboratory to begin with. A heartbeat later, Miss Price's attention was completely absorbed by the vocalizing cat. When McThomas called me aside to announce yet another visitor, I cannot honestly say I was annoyed. It appeared that I was destined to make no progress of any consequence that day. Besides, an excuse to temporarily excuse myself from the lady and her advances was quite welcome, and at that moment she was thankfully preoccupied by the cat and not likely to upset anything else for the time being. McThomas reported that the visitor had been found skulking around the perimeter while the guards were searching for the trespasser. I decided to take this meeting in the hall, as I was reluctant to leave the lady alone in my laboratory for longer than absolutely necessary. The visitor introduced himself as Jacques Rieux, a member of an organization from northern France. He described a need for a weapon to combat a rival group he referred to as Les Fournisseurs. This all sounded quite familiar. In fact, after a brief conversation, I was convinced that his Les Fournisseurs was in fact the very group Mr. DuPont belonged to, and whose weapon had been begun in the room adjacent our meeting. This made Rue's group the mob that DuPont was worried about. The prospect of completing two business arrangements with the effort of one was quite attractive, though Rue's would have to be much more portable, and due to certain parts required, very possibly a different technology. An engineering challenge. More attractive still. At this point, I realized that I could no longer hear the cat complaining of being held, and immediately felt the need to confirm that the lady was keeping her hands off of my scientific instruments. Monsieur Roux, I'm afraid I must excuse myself. An urgent matter awaits, and some trouble may befall if I do not soon return. However, in a week or two, I will be in Calais, and I can discuss the possibilities with you at that time. If you'll pardon me, then... I waited only as long as polite courtesy required as the footman escorted Mr. Roux toward the front door, then peered into the laboratory. This is an unusual proposition, but if it is well liked, it could become a regular feature. The local broadsheet has taken to printing short works of literature, whether prose or poetry. I had not paid it much attention until some of the staff shyly asked me to read one of the printed entries aloud, saying that it particularly suited my voice. It was an odd bit of flattery, but I humored them and read it. Of course, they said afterward that it was marvelous well done and so forth, but I could see in their eyes that they actually meant it. One declared it would be a good addition to the Ethercast. And while I hardly expect such adulation from you, dear colleagues, I must admit, it is quite enjoyable. And that is good enough reason for me. Here we are now, some years after. You and me, and funny laughter. Don't be scared, it's only dark. Soon you'll hear a meadowlark. Don't give up. Just one more try. Rainbows soon will fill the sky. See us in our upper limbos, peeking through the blinds on windows. Down below, and far as wide is, slick as kissing old King Midas. Silly birds who should know better, tell each hero, go and get her. Lady Luck's the one they're after, now and also ever after. Gosh and golly, gee, she's crying. Fortune teller, are you lying? Do you see the noses growing? Wonder where the truth is going. It took me a minute to find Miss Price. She had moved to the other side of the room, still holding the cat, somehow tucked under one arm. Her other arm was slung about the shoulders of a marble bust and was apparently whispering in its ear. It was a likeness of myself I had commissioned what feels like a lifetime ago now. She looked up at the portraits adorning the wall behind the bust, an assortment of male ancestors, including my father, and withdrew her arm quickly. "Oh, spare me your judgment," she exclaimed. She giggled and addressed the cat again. "Ignore them with me, cat. Isn't he handsome? Such defined features, such a chiseled jawline. If only his gaze was more kind. Wouldn't you like that, cat?" The cat struggled against her clutches half-heartedly and without success. This certainly answered any questions I had about the general nature of the recipe. Yes, the sculpture was a somewhat flattering impression of a young and rather dashing baron, but it was still a likeness of me, rarely the sort to turn the head of a lovely adventuress, and specifically, at the moment, her adversary. She was reaching out to trace the shape of the marble again, when I cleared my throat. She virtually jumped out of her skin at the sound. The cat used the opportunity to enact his escape to the windowsill, where he began to groom himself with indignant firmness. "Oh dear," she exclaimed, as she fumbled to catch the cat, then looked back at me. She lowered her lashes and adopted an expression that was itself frankly feline. "Ah, yes. Where were we?" A moment later, she paused, simply halted mid-step. Her expression shifted, almost melted from predatory interest to complete mortification. With wide eyes, she simply said, "Oh my." She looked around the laboratory as though seeing it for the first time, or perhaps looking for damage done. "Good afternoon, Miss Price," I greeted her, sensing that perhaps we had the opportunity for a fresh start, in which I happened to have the upper hand. "Would you like to sit down?" She stood rooted in place. "You must think very little of me, Lord Blackwater," she finally managed. I considered spelling out to her in excruciating detail the reasons I should, but from her embarrassed demeanor I could see that she recalled the finer details quite well. The potion's effects began and ended quite suddenly, and impaired judgment, but not memory. I would need to make a note of all this, and its stark contrast to the effects of alcohol and similar personality-altering substances. "What do you want from me, Miss Price?" I finally asked. I wanted my laboratory to myself again, but had to ensure she wasn't going to do anything else stupid. She made as though to speak, but the words did not come. "You have wasted enough of my time. Do speak up." She looked close to tears. "I apologize for what just happened. It will not happen again." "I should hope not." After another moment of exceedingly awkward silence, she murmured that she would see herself out. To reach the door, she had to pass the cat, now staring at her balefully. In that moment, I thought I misheard her. No, she was indeed apologizing to the cat. I shook my head and went to the bookshelf beside the door to collect a smallish book wrapped in plain brown paper, where it had been tucked in full view the entire time. Miss Price, finished with the cat, moved to the door and paused before me as if wanting to say something before she left. I silently held the book toward her. She took it hesitantly, as though expecting me to snatch it back. She peered inside the wrapping and then up at me, wide eyes a mixture of confusion, relief, and something else. Twice, she opened her mouth to speak and abruptly closed it again. She clutched the package tightly to her chest and hurried out. I watched her go, still uncertain what had come over me. My gaze fell on the cat, sitting on the windowsill, no doubt shedding. It met my eyes and halted its grooming, then darted across and out of the room. Finally, peace and quiet. About time, too. As you see, the results of esoteric recipes can indeed have some unnatural effects on the individuals taking them. The work I do is delicate, and any number of things can go wrong, even without complications from outside interference. Quite honestly, at this point I am uncertain to what degree it went wrong, and to what specific effect. Even without errors, in the wrong hands, potions like this could be incredibly dangerous. Of course, in the right hands.
The Blackwater Ethercast is produced and performed by Nicholas Jovian. Additional voices by Elise Andonian. This episode was written by Anita Zeisman. Beginning and ending music is by Derek and Brandon Fichter. They can be found at dbfichter.bandcamp.com. Today's entertainment was Desolation Theme, written by Ken Nordine. Be sure to subscribe to the Ethercast and send your friends to lordblackwater.com so they can too. A new chapter is released twice monthly. Also visit lordblackwater.com to be the featured entertainment. And thanks for listening. We appreciate you, even if the Baron never says so.